Hello and a warm welcome. I am Armin Trost, professor for organizational behavior at the Furtwangen University in Germany, and this is my course on social research methods.
So hello everybody, today we talk about a final step, so to speak, and today we're going to talk about reporting and how you report your study, maybe in a thesis, a bachelor thesis or a master thesis or in any kind of academic paper. And I have one here. Well, this is an article, right, from the European Journal of Social Psychology. It's a peer-reviewed article and they look like this, you know. I mean, you are familiar with that. And when you look at those pieces, yeah, they look very often very, I would say, very factual, right? Very boring. And this is how it is supposed to be. And when you look at various papers, when you look at various theses, doctoral thesis, master thesis, bachelor thesis, and you compare those, then you will find that there is a common structure, more or less. Okay, I mean, there might be some variation, but there is always a kind of structure. And of course, every academic paper starts with a title, right? And also your thesis has a title page. And you mention the authors. And then you have index, an overview of the content. Of course, this is how it starts. Not in an academic article, but in your thesis, you have an overview of the content, also indicating the pages and everything. So, and then you start with an introduction, right? And in a thesis or in any kind of academic report, the introduction is there to outline what your thesis, your work is all about. And a core piece of that is the research question. What is the problem you want to solve, you want to address with your work? It's a kind of promise to the reader. It's a promise saying, look, if you really make it to the end, if you read that whole thing, then you're going to get an answer to this particular question. So it's kind of an implicit contract between you and the reader that you outline there. So that's the core piece. Also, you might indicate why your research question is relevant. Why should you read that? Why have you chosen this topic? Not for personal reason, of course, that does not matter. I mean, your personal motivation does not matter at all in that regard, but why is it important for the world to get an answer to this particular research question? And then what you also might do in the introduction is that you outline your work. You might say, okay, in the second chapter, after the first chapter introduction, in the first chapter, the theory will be outlined with a strong focus on this and that. In the third chapter, our own study will be presented, blah, blah, blah. So you give a little bit an outlook, right? Okay, but then starts the theory. And the theoretical part is there to outline all the theoretical points, all the theoretical content which is necessary to understand your hypotheses. Why do you come to this hypothesis? What do we already know so far? How does your work add to the already existing knowledge that we in the scientific community possess? So it's not about writing things that are somehow interesting. Interesting, it's not. No, you don't write things that are interesting. You only write things that are relevant. Things that are relevant towards your research question and towards your hypothesis, right? So, and here you outline, you describe everything needed to understand why you get to your hypothesis and to what you want to look at in your later research. This is why the theoretical part is there. And very often in academic paper, this is part of the introduction. So in this particular paper, which is just 4 pages long, that's why I've chosen it, it's just 1 page. And this outlines all the necessary current knowledge related to the research question. And then comes the method. Look here, method, right. Method. And in the method, what is the method part? You describe everything I need to know as a reader for 2 purposes. One purpose is that if I would like to replicate your study, I find here all the information necessary so that I could do the exact same study as you did. So you have no secrets about your method. You outline everything. And also, it's important that you describe your methods in detail so that I can criticize you, so that I might question the internal validity of what you have done, maybe. Yeah. So you open the door and you lay everything on the table. As I said, you have no secrets. And primarily, you outline how you operationalize your independent variable, your dependent variable, what kind of data collection techniques do you use? Do you use a questionnaire? Do you do kind of content analysis? Okay, a content analysis, here's the coding scheme. Yeah, you might do a systematic observation. Okay, here's the structure. So you outline how you collect the data. Exactly. And also you describe your research design. Everything is needed that is needed to understand the different experimental conditions, maybe to really understand the research setting, the entire scenario and everything. And also what you describe is your sample and your sampling technique. How do you get to your sample? Is it snowball sampling? Is it a simple random sample? Is it a quota sample? What is it? So once you have outlined everything, then you come to the results, right? And in the results part, you often have something like, in my classes I also always mention, I name it a killer graph or a killer article. So in this particular article, here is the killer table. It's a table. And in this table, all the results are mentioned. And you just show the plain statistics. That's the first thing. Okay. And once you have shown your statistical results, sorry, then you discuss it, right? And that goes very often along results and discussion. So, and the main question here, of course, is are you allowed to recheck the null hypothesis or not? How do your results go along with your theory, with your hypothesis, with what you propose? So you compare, so to speak, the results with what you have assumed. And also what you do in the discussion is you criticize your own method. So really, I mean, as a researcher, you're very, very modest. You criticize yourself and even when you have all the reasons to reject the null hypothesis, you still might ask yourself loud, right? Why there might still be threats to your internal validity, maybe? To what extent you really can say that the independent variable is the causal reason for the variation in the dependent variable? Okay, so you criticize yourself, yeah. So and then comes the conclusion. The conclusion is the final part of your thesis, and you look at your thesis on hindsight, so to speak, right? So and the fundamental idea with the conclusion is that it's really a summary with everything already laying on the table. And when you don't want to read the entire piece, just read the conclusion. It's a summary on hindsight. And there is the fundamental rule that you would never bring in something new here. No new theory, no new explanation, no new idea. There's nothing new in the conclusion. Okay? And then in the end, of course, there are the references. So all the sources you were referring to throughout your thesis, you list here, so that I know which resources and where I can find them and so on. Okay, and then you might have in your thesis an appendix, and in the appendix you add your questionnaire. Maybe your coding scheme, maybe your raw data matrix, along with an explanation of the structure of your raw data matrix. So that's something for the appendix, something that the reader must not read. Yeah, but you still deliver it in case that the reader wants to know all these things. Okay, and in the end, you might add contact details of the authors who were involved, so that the reader could get in touch with the author in case of any questions or remarks or whatever. Okay, so in my life, in my academic career, I've supervised many theses, hundreds, maybe thousands, and let alone all the term papers and they're very often. Things I find that especially freshmen do, the junior students, and I would like to show you some do's and don'ts, okay? Some very practical do's and don'ts. So, for instance, you would never write something like, "We have conducted an experiment." Why not? Because terms like "we" or "I" do not appear in an academic paper. It's not about you. It's not about us. It's about the fact. It's about the truth. So that's why I would write, "An experiment has been conducted." So you always write in the third person, as I will summarize in a minute. Okay. You would never write something like, "All descriptive statistics are shown here." Double point. Yeah. So, and then comes the graph or the table. No, you would not do this. You would rather write something like, "All descriptive statistics are shown in figure 7. So you specifically refer in that particular moment to a specific table or to a specific graph. I mean, you could also write something like, "Descriptive analysis," in brackets, "see figure 7, show a blah, 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 blah." Okay, so the point here is that whenever you have a graph or a table, you should indicate at some point in your text when the reader is supposed to look at it, right? Okay. Next thing is, I find that all too often, is that when you have one sub-paragraph, yeah, then you also have another one. Right? So sometimes I see things like, "Chapter 2, and then you have the sub paragraph 2.1. And if there is a 2.1, there also must be a 2.2. Otherwise, 2.1 is chapter 2. So, okay. So that's something. And sometimes, you know, what happens when you do your own study and you report about it, sometimes you have emotions. Of course you have, because you're a human being, and sometimes you're sad or disappointed about some results. You very often are. But you never will show your emotions. Never. It's not about emotion. Your amygdala is not relevant here, really. It's not about emotion. It's purely about facts and the truth. And so you would never write something like, "Unfortunately, the results do not support the hypothesis." You know, unfortunately, you would never write unfortunately. "To our disappointment," or "Luckily," "and we are happy to share that." No, it does not matter whether you're happy, disappointed, lucky, or sad, or whatever, because your emotions, your emotions have no place in the academic writing. Your emotions have a place somewhere else. I don't want to talk about it here, but not in your academic world. And also, you do not want to address the reader's amygdala or limbic system, you want to address the prefrontal cortex of the reader, right? You want to make the reader think and not feel, right? So you share not your feelings, you share your facts. That's the idea here, okay? Sometimes I find graphs which are look nice. But graphs in an academic paper don't have to look nice. So three-dimensional graphs. Why should you use three-dimensional graphs? No, you don't. Yeah, it's because what you want to do is you reduce your graphs to the minimum, to the facts. Also, I mean, look at this table. Isn't it boring? Wow, it's extremely boring. It's so reduced to the facts. And also the same applies with any kind of graphs, statistical graphs, bar charts, and so. And also, I mean, don't use pictures in your report. Pictures, you don't use pictures to make your report a little bit nicer or more entertaining. No, you don't do this. You only can add pictures, photographs, for instance, when they are really relevant, so that the reader can really understand what you were doing. So, for instance, I mean, when you do a study about visual cues or something, you better show the visual cues, of course, right? When Philip Zimbardo ran his Stanford Prison Experiment, of course he had to show how the setting looked like. It was not only interesting, it was relevant for the reader. When Stanley Milgram reported about this Milgram experiment, he posted a photo of the learner in the report. It's good to know how that person looks like. And also for the readers to see that this is a very nice person who got really shocked and who was... It's something that is not only interesting or nice or something, it's relevant. So you only post pictures when they are relevant regarding the method. Okay, so let me summarize some things. Of course, as I outlined, have a clear structure. Okay, have a clear structure that follows scientific conventions as I have outlined it. Always write in the third person. There might be an exception, for instance, the preface. When you also want to acknowledge some people, want to thank some people, you do it in the first person, of course. But in the core body of your work, you never mention I or we or something like that, because it's not about you. It's about the facts and the truth, right? And you are never funny. You are never provoking. You're never entertaining. You're never emotional. I like text which is emotional. I also write blogs. And when I write blogs, I'm very bold and I'm very provoking. I love to be provoking. I mean, those who know me know I do hard hiding my emotions and my passion and my. This has a place in some formats like blogs or so, but really not in an academic paper. And then sometimes students try to write in a scientific style. You know, they want that it looks scientific, which makes a text complicated, hard to be read. What you should do instead is you write in an as simple way as possible. Simplicity is key. Clarity is key. Don't care about whether what you write sounds scientific. Just be scientific. Just be to the facts. Be as clear as possible. Make sure that your sentences are short, not long. Long sentence does not make your text more scientific. Okay? I mean, really, in my life, I read so many theses, and sometimes I don't want to see this. I don't want to read a sentence two times, three times, so that I can understand it. Make it understandable, simple, and clear. The things are complicated anyway. So, okay? When using figures, refer to the figures and tell the reader when to look at what in a given position in your paper. All figures, of course, must have numbers, headlines, and so on. They must be relevant, not just entertaining. Yeah, no, they don't need to be entertaining at all. Don't brighten up your paper with pictures, figures, or whatever. They must be relevant. You need to use citation rules, and whatever rule you take, be consistent. I don't want to tell you use this citation rule or this citation rule. Just be consistent. Depending on where you want to publish your paper, you have to follow certain citation rules, but the standard rule is that when you start using a citation rule in the beginning of your paper, you also have to stick to it throughout the rest of your paper. Yeah? Only use academic sources. I always tell my student, if you refer to a Wikipedia article, really, I gonna visit you at 3 o'clock in the night, and then something happens that we all don't want. Really, don't do this. Don't refer to Wikipedia. I mean, there are some sources that are somewhere in between. Harvard Business Review, yeah, maybe. Sometimes, yeah. What you should do is also. I mean, when you look at the resource, the so-called research that was done by companies like McKinsey or so. Sorry, this is not scientific. What McKinsey is publishing is not scientific. It's marketing. Really, be aware of this. And I would never cite any McKinsey report or Boston Consulting Group report or all these consulting firms in an academic paper. I would not do that. I would be, at least I would be very, 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 very careful. These reports are not there to find the truth. These reports are there to outline a problem for which they would like to sell the solution, okay? It is something that you need to understand. So be very careful with the sources you're referring to, okay? Quotations, sometimes quotations. I mean, be very careful with that. I mean, you might run into the danger of plagiarism. You only use quotations when it's really, really, really necessary. Okay? When you say, there is an original quotation, there's an original quote that is so brilliant, I have to cite it here. Nobody, there's no way to put it better than with this quotation. Then you use it. I mean, in some disciplines, like when you do research about the Bible or something like this, you have to quote the Bible. Maybe sometimes you don't put it in your own words, of course. Or let's say in legal, you have to refer to the law, and you don't quote law in your own words. Okay. But in social science, there's rarely the necessity to really mention an original quote. So in general, never copy and paste. Don't do this. Don't do this. That's plagiarism. I will outline in my next episode, when it comes to the psychology of writing a thesis, how you better do it. Everything you write, you write in your own words, and you write it from your own understanding, and not with a book beside you where you just translate it in your own words directly. No, don't do this. Write it from your own understanding in your own terms. That's essential. Okay? So that's for the moment about reporting, and as I indicated, in the next and the last episode of this series, I will talk about the psychology of writing a thesis. So thanks for listening, and see you then.